Welcome to the 17th episode of the Reckless Dice Podcast, where we discuss Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay 3rd Edition. I'm the co-founder of Reckless Dice and your host, Jesse Gitzman-Burke. With me tonight are local giant from the north, Lester Crowe, and his strolling bones. Tonight we have a special guest from the Daily Empire, all the way from Finland, Lauri Maijala, also known as Doc Cthulhu. Welcome to the show. This week we're going to cover quite a few of kind of non-Fantasy Flight related news elements. We're going to cover the super huge detailed map of the old Warhammer Old World, my beastly contraption that I've I think finally managed to get into a reasonably complete form where I can set it down and ignore it for a while, is I worked with Jacob McQuaid to slice that up over the weekend, and we put that live with a brand new update. I'm kind of calling this the 2.0. It essentially made the map from my previous edition about 2.5 to 3 times larger. So now fully encompasses the Darklands all the way up to the North Pole and covers about 80% of Araby and the Tomb Kings area and some other lesser known regions. So it's it also included a nice revamp of the Orc and Goblin territories. So a lot of the map now includes special icons for like Goblin camps, Skaven lairs, Orc camps. Even goes so far as to identify Forest Goblins versus Night Goblins versus Orcs and even Savage Orc tribes. So that's available at Gitzman's Gallery as a printout or as the Google Maps version. But I do want to note that the measuring tools may need a revamp. Those may not be accurate in the current map, so use those with a grain of salt for the time being.
Oh, that's so exciting. I didn't know about this.
Yeah, it kind of just happened. I got a hankering to work on it, and then all of a sudden it started making some serious progress.
I have a gamer heart on right now.
So, Lori, have you had a chance to play with that map at all?
Yeah, basically every session I run, I use it to locate some places, and I refer it to my players.
What I think we should do is get everybody who comes on the show a town in the Border Princes, and we'll just kind of like form our own little region down there.
I like that idea.
I really like that idea.
Have I made you a town yet, Lester? I can't remember.
I don't think you have. But if you do, I'll constantly launch attacks against your town.
I was kind of hoping we could like unite.
Oh, possibly. Depends on what kind of gold is in it for my town.
What would you call your town? Like, Lauri, what would you call your town?
I don't know. I actually have like a bunch of towns already there that are not canonical. I think in Bretonnia and in Norska.
Oh, yeah?
If I remember correctly.
Okay, so you have a bunch of stuff already there, huh? So you'd be up in Norska then, Lester. You'd be down in the Border Princes.
I would like to be in Norska too because of my Norse descent. But yeah, I'd like the Border Princes. Gives me more.
Oh, no, I just put myself in the Border Princes, and if anybody finds it, kudos to them. The Norska is just as easily because of the small towns and the tribal aspect of it. That's perfect.
Yeah, I like how you can like kind of mold it to your own vision. So it would give me a chance to not stay within the stricture of the Empire or any of those other places that are specifically flavored.
Yeah, exactly. So Lester, tell us about Facebook. We've been spending a lot of time there this week.
Well, I started to kind of put more stuff up on there because I kind of want to create more of a conducive or tight-knit community for our Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay 3rd Edition, centered around the Reckless Dice podcast. So I was trying to rack my brain for ideas on how to get the community more involved, and I decided that we should do a question every Monday, which we can then cover on the podcast, and just try to get people kind of discussing how they use their game, what pieces of the game they like the most, and stuff like that. So the question that I asked was, what is your favorite miscast effect? And there are several different options on here to pick. I personally like the time distortion one the most.
Do you have a preference? Have you seen any good ones in action?
Actually, we haven't had any wizards in our games. We have in a couple of sessions ago, one of my players made a new one and actually made me cast immediately when he made a spell. He soured all the milk, and it was kind of funny because he was freeing a known murderer from a prison in Uberschreck. That's basically all I have.
Yeah, I haven't actually had... I've only had one game session where somebody played as a wizard, so I have not had any miscasts in my in any of the game sessions I've played. However, one of my favorite ones from the prior edition, which has always stuck with me, and I don't even... Maybe one of you guys know if it's in the current edition, is the one where the all the food within a certain radius of the caster begins to just rot. It kind of just like rapidly ages and begins to fester and mold. The melt goes bad. The bread molds up. The meat begins to rot and become maggot infested.
That should be in there, but I just because of the fact that they released the whole Nurgle expansion. But I don't think it is because I looked through all the cards. That was more so what it is. If you possess the cards or the books, you know you're going to read, find out what one of those miscasts you like the most. But I really want to keep doing that every Monday. Ask a question, get the community involved, find out what their thoughts are. And we're edging ever closer to 100 likers. Is that what you call it on Facebook?
I think you like something, yeah.
Yeah. So I think that Jesse and I we should discuss maybe some sort of competition for when we hit that milestone, I guess. And get some more involvement going on there. I also one other quick note on the Facebook page. I've been making videos over the last few months. Basically, they're Warhammer fluff videos or setting videos, and I really encourage anybody to make requests for things they'd like to have videos made out about. Currently,
yeah, I have a good request for the first one after you kind of cover your the one that you did put up.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was just going to do my original idea was just to kind of roll it out as the hit like. In a historical fashion. So the next one I would do would be concerning the old ones and the slan and the creation, the actual creation of the world.
Oh, I see where you're going. Okay.
Because the first one is in the beginning and it's actually an excerpt from an old second edition book. And it's a reading of a piece that Teclis was said to have written about basically the origins of time and space. And that's the first video that I have up there. You can go check that out on the Facebook page. And like I said, I highly encourage people to send in requests for videos they'd like to see. It takes a little bit of time to produce these. And I'm going to try to get better quality. The sound quality is a little off on that video, but, I posted a picture to help with it. Being able to translate when the voice actually drops off or is drowned out by the sound. But those are the two things that we've got going right now on the Facebook page.
So the other two, a few things that are going on, actually coming up this weekend, is which for, let's see, what is this weekend? This weekend is going to be the September 2nd, 3rd, 4th, and 5th. There's two conventions, gaming conventions that Reckless Dice is going to be going to. One of those, Celesticon, is in the San Francisco Bay Area and Redwood City specifically, and that will be that is the one we won't be attending. Pacificon, which is in Santa Clara, which is actually very close by, like less than a half hour away, we will be attending both Saturday and Sunday, running some more. Fantasy roleplay third edition games and probably playing in a bunch of other games as well. So if anybody sees us there, make sure and track us down. I'll wear my Reckless Dice shirt on Saturday. We're looking to get some pickup games going. And then very lastly, Lester, do you want to cover a bit of the Fantasy Grounds 2 and Neil Foster?
Yeah, Neil, he actually put up a note or a post on the forums, the Fantasy Flight forums, stating that he has had his rule set for Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay 3rd Edition on Fantasy Grounds 2 go live, and he's got a really good response as people have actually got to kind of see what it is exactly that he's done, and it is jaw-dropping. It is so beautiful.
It is.
He posted some screenshots that were that kind of showed an action and a little bit of a tutorial to get you started.
We've had the pleasure of playing a couple different games. Well, I got to play one with Paul and Neil, and then I got to play one with Jesse and Neil. And I think you can listen.
That one's with a little help from my friends. Oh, okay. That live session is up on the web at recklessdice.com. You can download and listen to how smoothly it ran. And you also, if knowing that we played it with the rule set and played it online, you can kind of get a little bit of an idea of how it functions just by us talking through some of it. So if you are considering using it, definitely give that a listen. It's worthwhile.
Yeah, it's fun.
Not to mention a hysterical game session.
It was pretty funny how the events transpired. I wish we had recorded the one that Paul and I did, because Mario had a couple mishaps. He fell down a couple ladders and dropped his crossbow several times. But it's really fun. It's an excellent way of playing with people. Like, if you don't have people in your immediate area, it's a really good way of getting some use out of your Warhammer Fantasy roleplay.
So in light of the release of that rule set for Fantasy Grounds 2, our second main topic tonight is going to be centered around playing games remotely and playing games online, whether using map tools, Fantasy Grounds 2, or any other method that anybody can think of. We're going to talk through some of the benefits, detriments, how to do it, what to do, what not to do, and really just kind of take a general discussion and get people who are unfamiliar with it familiar with it, and people who are considering doing it, kind of tell them what to do to get started. So after the break, we're going to get into our first main topic, though, which is centered around Lowry and the Daily Empire. So we have our special guest, Doc Cthulhu, and he is the main man heading up the Daily Empire, another fantastic fan site for Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay 3rd Edition. Lowry, tell us a little bit about what your goals are for the Fantasy Empire site, or for the Daily Empire.
It's a blog kind of thing I started after I completely forgot to update the unfamous, or I don't know if you have heard about Hammerzeit. I was actually the second admin on that site too, but I kind of forgot about it with my child being born and such things, and felt kind of bad. Yeah, thanks. So I started Daily Empire actually because I had seen like hundreds of conversations on different forums about movies and music that would be inspirational for role-playing games. And I just got bored to look at the same lists again and again, and started the Daily Empire to kind of put the lists into one place so that players and GMs could read them more easily. And kind of went on with that. So adding more inspiration bit by bit.
You know, actually, I do recall the first time seeing the site was when I was looking for Warhammer movies. And I didn't have any good ones. And that was where I stumbled across the site. And then shortly after that, heard you talking about it in the forums. And it sounds like you actually started the Daily Empire for a very similar reason for what I started Gitzman's Gallery, which was I wanted to make a one-stop shop for all Warhammer maps. And you kind of like had a similar concept there. That's great.
Yeah.
So aside from like the Warhammer themed music and movies, what else does the Daily Empire offer?
Currently it's an expanding product. There is some photography and some graphics I have tried to gather. I've taken some photos and I have players that are artists. I tried to force them to draw some pictures for players to use, but mainly now it's more like keeping track of inspirational stuff about it or in the internet for to be used in Warhammer. Like I was discussing using the art from Magic the Gathering as inspiration or handout material. There are some adventures and downloads and whatnot on the site also.
One of my favorite things, which we've mentioned a few times on the show, is the one sheet adventures, which you actually ran a competition for when you were first launching them for submittals, right?
Yeah, I don't think it's so much of a contest. It's more like an open, what do you call it?
A request for people submit them and a place to house them.
Yes, exactly.
One of our most recent sessions, we ran the Sweet Marrow adventure that I think is from Gallows.
Yeah,
from there, and that was fantastic.
It was quite good. Good session.
It was funny. I couldn't. After reading it, I just so many ideas were coming through my head on what to do with it, and I just started a local gaming group here with a few people, and they're all new players, but they generally new to role playing as a whole. But we did take that opportunity to play one of those, and I'm looking forward now, having done it, to try a few of the other ones. Lester, have you done any one pagers before?
No, not yet. I'm getting a group together in the middle of September for the purposes of, well, A, playing, because it's fun to play, and B, I want to do some playtesting for an article that I'm writing for Libra Fanatica 9, and I'd love to run. I think it's perfect. The one-shots are perfect to be able to seed them all throughout the Empire to you know, encourage my players to travel from point A to point B, giving me an opportunity to play test. They look really good, though.
Yeah, I think the reason why I started writing them was because I have been a player in the Enemy Within campaign, and I was reading through the books while starting a new campaign with my current group, and they require quite a lot. It was called like cameo adventures at that time. You know, like adding small adventures to the greater scene. So I think these could easily be run as side quests anytime. For
sure. Yeah, absolutely. So tell me, one of my favorite things from here was the list of movies and, you know, just Warhammer. Those movies that kind of get you excited and ready to play. And this is a very robust list you have going here. What's everybody's top three Warhammer getting excited movies?
I think I have to mention the Finnish film Sauna. It's probably one of the best movies I've seen for inspiration and feeling about Warhammer.
What is it called again? Oh, Sauna. Here it is.
Yeah.
A Finnish movie about the sins of men. Great atmosphere and feel. If you can get your hands on this one, you should watch it.
I'm currently writing a one-pager that is based on Sauna, so I hope
I know nothing about that one. I will have to check that out.
Yeah, you definitely should.
And what's your second?
Perfume, The Story of a Murderer.
That is a fantastic movie. I love that movie.
And for third, I have to say it's The Name of the Rose, because it's like the investigation which I love to run.
I just recently watched that one. I was not familiar with that until I saw it on your list, and
really
did like that one. I think I recall it coming out, but had never seen it, never heard anything about it ever again. What about you, Lester? What were some of the ones that you really enjoyed?
Solomon Kane's awesome. About anything with Van Helsing. I love vampires, and Van Helsing's sweet. I don't know if I can't really think of any off the top of my head that you haven't already covered here.
You know, my favorite one that is actually very recent is Black Death.
Yeah, I was going to mention that.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that.
Black Death is Sean Bean stars in it. It is the Empire. I mean, you just swap, you know, the Church for the Cult of Sigmar, and it is the Empire. There are flagellants, there's witch burnings, there's knights, there's rowdy peasants, there's fear of cults. I mean, it is really a pretty well done movie. So if anybody hasn't seen that, in every stretch of the imagination, go find that one. Name of the Rose was also outstanding. Perfume, I really, really enjoyed. If anybody hasn't seen that, really do check that one out.
I guess the Game of Thrones is a really good, it's not a movie, it's a miniseries, but that really gets the feel of Warhammer, in my opinion. There's no black powdered weapons or anything like that, but just the idea, the social intrigue and stuff like that, I think it's really good.
I think you're probably, yeah, you're absolutely right. Particularly the Stark family and their interactions, mm-hmm. I think that has a nice Warhammer vibe to it.
Oh, yeah. I just saw here too that you've got Dragon Slayer, which is one of my all time favorite movies.
Yes, he also has Jabberwocky,
that's a great one.
Tough one to handle.
I own that one in several different formats. That's a great movie.
That was a strange movie. I was not really prepared for what that was going to be when I first found it and watched it.
Well, Michael Palin is my favorite member of.
Monty Python
group. So yeah.
I know a lot of people really love Brotherhood of the Wolf. I didn't care for it too much, but I know a lot of people really, really like that one. Maybe it just didn't strike the right chord with me. I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't see it. So,
well, fantastic. So, what are your future plans for the Daily Empire?
I just finished last night the Cult of the Possessed, which is for like. I don't know how to describe this. It's a supplement. Basically, it's only a chaos cult. It's a concept that was started by Sami Uusitalo for second edition. It's about using material from several different sources and giving a different kind of cult for GMs to run. It's based on entities called Belakor and Malal that somebody might be familiar with, and it's really Cthulhu inspired piece of work, and I'm really, really happy about it.
I did take a brief opportunity to look through it, and it looks almost like it could belong in the Liber Fanatica. The production value of it's quite nice.
Yeah, I was considering about that too, but as the previous supplement, Uusitalo was published as a separate supplement, I think it kind of rolls better as a separate
mm-hmm.
thing.
Fantastic. So, where can we find the Daily Empire? What's its address?
DailyEmpire.guildredemond.net.
Okay, and we'll put that in the show notes as well for anybody who'd like to go check it out. Doc Cthulhu, great work on that.
Yeah, for sure. I really like it.
I think this is probably one of the better news sites for Warhammer Roleplay. If you want more of the unofficial and the official, not just what Fantasy Flight's putting out, but if you want to know what the community's up to, this is kind of your one-stop shop for that. Okay. And might I also add, your random NPC generator on the homepage is awesome.
Yeah.
If anybody just needs a guy, like you need a quick name for that random guy you had to think up, there's one on every page. It gives you the name. Like the one I'm looking at now is Carl Schwenfeld, and he has it gives you a characteristic, like a unique appearance characteristic. So he has an eagle-like nose. His mindset is that he's naive. His motivation is he wants to meet a person of high religious status, and he also has a secret, which he's a member of a secret wizard organization. And every time you refresh the page, you'll get a new one.
Yeah, I like this. I like Axel von Hotch. He writes erotic poetry.
Excellent. So where did all this come from? How big is that database of characters?
It's big. It randomly takes one thing for every of those aspects.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like five lists with like hundreds of things to choose from. I have a similar program. I think it can be downloaded from Daily Empire.
Mm-hmm.
Wait a second. Yes, it's called The Visions of Chaos. It's for PC to use. It actually gives you elves, halflings and dwarves also, and both male and female, and there is an opportunity for humans to be mutated there also. It's quite an old program. I haven't had anyone to update it for me.
Well, it's still, you'd never know it. The content that was in the random generator is very appropriate and fun. So,
yeah.
Excellent work there. Well, when we come back from the break, we're going to get into gaming online. We'll talk map tools. We'll talk gaming over Skype, and we'll talk Fantasy Grounds. And we're back. Our second main topic for the evening is going to be gaming online. We've talked many times throughout the podcast episodes about map tools, about Fantasy Grounds 2, and using Skype to play remotely with people, old gaming buddies who have since moved away, or maybe you've moved away and you have no one local who wants to play, but you've still got a hankering to get some game on. Or, maybe you just want a different way to play. Gaming online can really satisfy a lot of different needs. And we've had a chance to explore several different options of gaming and kind of wanted to give you our tips or our experiences playing in different forms remotely. So, let's quickly go over, Lowry, what kind of online gaming have you participated in?
I have run several sessions via Skype using voice or writing, but I haven't had any actual experiences with map tools or what it's called, Fantasy Grounds. Yeah, mm-hmm. I know them both, but I haven't tried it.
And Lester, what kind of remote gaming have you tried?
Well, actually, I was fortunate enough to have a guy named Jesse Burke invite me to play a game via map tools. And that was quite the experience. I really enjoyed it. The map.
That is where we met, huh?
That is a precise. Well, we met. Yeah, I remember. I sent you an email and asked you about it because I had nobody around here who really wanted to commit to playing frequently, and that was my start in the Reckless Dice podcast. It was pretty lucky. It's like I won the lottery, but
and then the And then you and I both had an opportunity then to explore Fantasy Grounds through a lucky interaction with Neil Foster.
And they both have their ups and downs. I really like what you've done with map tools, how you've made the maps, and how it's very hands on. It's much more like a computer game. But it also
let's get into the comparisons in a moment though, because I really want to talk before we do that. I want to talk about the reasons why you'd want to play online as opposed to a gaming group. And I mean, obviously, there's the very basic level of you can't find anybody to play. But alternatively, you can play with people from all over the world, which I really, mm-hmm. really enjoy doing. I love playing with guys from England or Finland or Germany or France, Australia. We've had opportunities to play with people literally all over the world. And I personally love playing with people with accents. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure the American accent has its charm or lack thereof for mm-hmm. others as well. But it really kind of adds this extra element to a character because they actually feel like somebody very, very different. You almost feel like they're getting their own new voice just by having a built-in accent. And I really, really enjoyed that, even though it's kind of like a random bonus.
Yeah, it is really interesting. Plus, I think that people from different cultures also handle situations differently.
Very much so.
They see the world in a slightly different way, and I do. That's one of the biggest benefits of playing online is the opportunity, because otherwise I'd never get to play games with Neil or Doc Thulu here. It would be really cool if he wants to join up and actually get an experience playing Fantasy Grounds.
Definitely. Well, one of the fun things I've discovered while, I guess this little realization I came to while playing, because I began the map tool stuff because I couldn't find anybody to play locally. My gaming group after college split up. Everybody went their own way. I got married, things like that. So going somewhere with a regular gaming group just kind of disappeared, but I wasn't done gaming. I wanted to keep going, so I looked for a way to play online, discovered Map Tools, and kind of began working with that during second edition. But what I discovered while doing it is that playing with people you don't generally play with is a huge, huge bonus, because you get in this rut when you play with people who you've known forever. Everybody plays a certain style. Everybody has a certain set of rules they follow. Everybody handles traps a certain way or a dark hallway a certain way. And when you play with people you don't normally play with, you learn new things about role-playing like crazy. I mean, left and right, you learn new ways to handle situations. You get put in unique scenarios. It's been some of the most enjoyable role playing I've played, far exceeding any of the local gaming groups I've played growing up.
I think it's great too. It's like I've run through a few sessions and cons and played a few. It's always very, very different than local groups, and it's nice to have like different things and. Gives you a little boost on your gaming feelings.
Yeah. Absolutely. The other thing then that online gaming offers is a chance to offer a shared gaming board or a shared chat window or something like that that everybody gets to see while playing. So in Lowry's description where you were using Skype. Do you want to give us a little bit of an idea of what a typical gaming session might feel or run like when you're exclusively using the voice and chat features of Skype?
It was pretty easy, actually. We had the maps were online, so I could refer to them when needed. But mainly we were running the sessions online because we had no time to gather around, so we had like an hour or two, so we could play every week, and it was that saved time that we played, and it was nice. It was nice. I think the main reason I liked it was because we wrote the adventure. The players took more time to. Think about what they were doing and saying, and afterwards we had like a few pages of really good reading that were updated on our own community.
So how do you handle things like where characters are positioned or how to do dice rolling?
Kind of like in Warhammer Edition 3, it wasn't so much big of a deal. It was like a corridor. You are in there, so and we were like rolling dice like gentlemen. So if you said you succeeded, you succeeded.
Okay, fair enough. So I mean, if you trust your group and want to have some play in that group. So if you wanted to add an additional level of complexity to running a game on Skype, and Skype does, it's free, you can go international with it, and you can do conference calls with, I don't know how many people, but at least we've done at least 6 or 7 people. So I know that's, you can do at least that much. You can also do things like Map Tools. Now, Map Tools is a free application, which is available at rptools.net. And that is one player will host the game, and then other players who download it will log into that server, and everybody will share a common digital game board. Typically, we'd also use Skype alongside that to facilitate the voice work, and then we'd use the map and the tokens built into Map Tools. In order to represent where people are located, and the tokens themselves are capable of holding a variety of stats that are similar to what you'd have on your character sheet. And I developed a rule set along with the help of some other community members, both from the RP Tools forums and also some of the Warhammer Roleplay 3rd Edition forums, to basically customize that rule set specific to Warhammer Roleplay 3rd Edition. And then even went so far as to make a couple of the adventures I probably did what, like 3 or 4 of them, which have, you know, all the NPCs created and maps and everything like that. So you can actually play out a game almost as if you're playing it on a game board, where you have a lot of supporting visuals to kind of let you know where things are located. And that was really in an effort to cater to the people who wanted that specific locations or specific level of detail that third edition was kind of getting away from. This kind of helped bridge that second edition and third edition style. But Lester, you know, you participated in several of the games using map tools. What did you think some of the benefits and some of the detriments of using map tools were?
Well, I think that the from a playing perspective, I wouldn't say there are too many detriments at all, actually, because when you're playing, you've got the beautiful maps just laid out there. So it's very easy to, you know, make a good decision with your character. But from a listener's perspective, like as we were recording these games to put up as a podcast, I find that the players tend to get away from actually describing what their characters do, or the game master steps away from describing what the location looks like because they have that image right in front of them. So from an actual playing perspective, I wouldn't say that there's much in the way of a drawback. You need to have a pretty hefty knowledge of programming and a little bit of time on your hands in order to actually build maps to that, to the quality that you've done some of the adventures to. But I had a good time. I thought it was really well done.
You certainly hit on one thing where the players rely on the available visuals almost too much. And we actually, you know, we discovered that the sessions we had recorded, like Lester said, were not really having the sufficient audio descriptions for anybody listening to the sessions. I found that the games we played ourselves, they were great from, like, you know, our own personal perspective, because we had those visuals. However, what we decided after a while, which I think was even more appropriate, which we'll kind of transition into Fantasy Grounds in a moment, but was we decided to not use as many of the visual assistance elements like pre-drawn maps and things like that, and instead just use the game board almost like you just use your dining room table while you're playing. You throw your tokens out there, you know, you play, and then that way you are forced to describe everything. You're forced to really make your experience known, and that created far more fulfilling role playing.
Oh yeah, it was much more traditional in the sense of, like, you know, playing first edition D&D or second edition D&D, where, I mean, you could use miniatures, but the game wasn't built around using miniatures like the newer versions of those games.
Well, not to mention, it's a hell of a lot easier to play the game. You don't need as much prep time. I don't need to spend 15 hours painting a map.
Yeah, like, you did a great job in those maps. Like, if anybody wants to look at these, it's phenomenal. But at the same time, it's extremely time consuming to create
I don't think I've played any of them except one.
It's even more so. I would say it's even more so time consuming than actually developing campaigns and adventures, you know, for local groups. And that can be quite time consuming, but
I'd also throw out there the learning curve for map tools is it's not a very intuitive program. Once you learn how to use it and its quirks, which it has many, it's not too bad and it's actually pretty flexible, but the learning curve just to get into it, to start having some fun with it, is pretty high.
And it's free too.
It's free though. They very actively update it.
That's a big thing, is that it is a free option for having a platform to play on.
And might I throw a kudos out to the development community on the forums at rptools.net. They are fantastic. You can ask a question like, I can't get this macro to do what I want it to do. Here's my code. What am I doing wrong? And man, within minutes, sometimes people will respond, and they are so friendly and helpful. I couldn't have done any of it without them. So, you know, really a big thanks out to them. But Lester, I'd love to hear your thoughts on, or kind of an overview on what Fantasy Grounds is, or Fantasy Grounds 2 specifically, which is a little newer one to the virtual gaming tabletop world.
Well, to my understanding, it's a pay like you have to pay to play it. Although Neil has kind of made it seem as though that that's not necessarily the case, that there's like a trial variety or something.
Well, there's multiple pay options depending on how you buy it. So I don't recall what the dollar values are, but essentially you can buy the software as a player, and or you can buy the software as a GM. Mm. Now, if you in within this group, you know, the GM's one's more expensive, but the GM is the one who hosts the game, and any players, when their purchase is very cheap, can log into a game run by the GM. Now, alternatively, there's a third pricing model, which is what Neil's been using, which is kind of the all-inclusive one, which basically the GM pays a whole bunch of money up front, and anybody can join in to his game without paying anything. Mm-hmm. So he's paid, let's call it $100 instead of $40.
Yeah, like that is definitely was my experience with it. Neil was gracious enough to host the game and do all the work. And it's I can't believe how amazing that tool is. I mean, it's like you're sitting down at a table and playing the game.
Visually, it's stunning.
Oh yeah, it is beautiful, and he's a great GM too, which really helps with the process. But I would say personally that is probably a more accessible version than MapTools. MapTools, like you said, it takes a little bit of a learning curve. Although its potential is excellent, but I would say that Fantasy Grounds is a little bit more of an entry level. Really simple to pick up and use. And Neil's put a lot of work into doing this this specific supplement or rule set, I guess, for Wufrup, I guess people call it.
WFRP.
Third so edition.
Just as a quick disclaimer on MapTools versus Fantasy Grounds, I think that While the MapTools stuff I made is free, I think that that Neil Foster's Fantasy Grounds content is a far more accurate representation of the rule system. He really went into an exceptional amount of detail, even for a very small reward. Sometimes you can tell a lot of coding and effort went into making something just right as opposed to good enough. It does show in the quality level.
Well, yeah, you can macro up, like, say you're going to use a melee attack pretty often and things like that. You can macro up dice pools. So all you have to do is click on the dice pool or use the specific hotkey and it will roll the dice pool for you. It's so intuitive. It's so amazing. You've got every possible angle that, like, from what I've seen, and I've dug into it quite a bit, every possible angle from the game is covered. He's got diseases in there. He's got just everything. It's incredible. It looks just like you're playing the game.
I felt the learning curve on Fantasy Grounds was also pretty steep, and I know you said it's pretty intuitive. I think it's intuitive after you break that learning curve.
Well, I think for this, I guess it's because
it's better than MapTools as far as the learning curve, but it's not how I would normally expect it to operate, but once you kind of get the idea of what it's capable of, and there's a lot of great tutorial videos out there, it is pretty powerful.
Well, I've only ever played Fantasy Grounds with this rule set. I've never played a D&D game or anything like that on it, so it was actually relatively intuitive to me because the way he has it set up, it's very much just like playing the normal game with your sheets. You've got your character sheet. You can go into it. You can look up. You can find all of your skills, which are all listed. You can find all your talents, which are all listed. It's incredible. I can't believe how much it is. I mean, when we were playing MapTools, I was using all my components, and I found that was pretty much a necessity for me to have my components from my game out. And I do that for Fantasy Grounds still because, I mean, I really like the pieces and everything. But I don't think it's as necessary. You definitely need to have the cards.
Yeah, you do. I guess it's a good disclosure that fantasy grounds and map tools are not replacements for the game rules. And we've said that 100 times. You guys are probably sick of it, but you know, they allow for a lot of things to be played, but it's really just the general role playing elements that it allows for. You know, components, cards, things like that are all still absolutely necessary in order to have a full fledged game. The last thing I'd like to throw in there for playing online, if you're interested in trying it or you need to try it because no one else is around you to play, hit up the Fantasy Flight forums and just say, hey, looking for some remote gaming or some gaming online. There are loads of people on there who are always looking. I get emails, once every week or so for people looking to play online. I apologize that I can't get everybody into a game, but I know that people are out there who want to play. And, we just need to start getting them hooked up together. So hit up Facebook and say, hey, looking to get an online game going. And I'm sure you'll find people because there are tons out there. And after the break, we're going to kick it off with some Q&A. And so we'll be right back. As always, you can submit your questions and comments to recklessdice@gmail.com or hit us up on Twitter @recklessdice. A lot of new players have been entering the forums over the last few weeks, and a lot of them have been asking what are some of the best starting adventures. What was the first adventure you played, and what do you suggest as being the first adventure?
Golden Alert Contract from first edition.
That is a good one.
I think it needs to be updated for 30th edition if somebody hasn't already done it.
Why do you think, why that one?
I think it's because it has quite Warhammer's feeling, but it, as I understand it, more and more people are coming from D&D community to Warhammer, and it's a bit of a dungeon crawl. So you can present your ideas about Warhammer in a familiar environment.
Interesting. Lester, have you played the Odenhaller Contract?
No, I have not played that one.
I've never played it, but I've read it, and I've listened to a live session of it, and it is a neat one. I do agree with you. It does have a very D&D or dungeon crawl feel during a portion of the adventure. It does have an excellent just Warhammer vibe to it. Absolutely. That's also what you would suggest people, a new player would start with? Do you think the complexity of that adventure is a little high for a new player, or do you think, or the scope of it?
Depending on the group, actually. The Elden Analog Contract is quite simple and has no investigation and these kind of Call of Cthulhu elements on it, which I like in Warhammer games.
But Lester, what's your favorite beginning adventure?
Well, I find that I actually do. Originally, I thought that the Enemy Within, which is, or no, is that what it's called? The one from the core set?
Eye for an Eye.
Enemy Within is the first one I ever played, and I played that one back when I was playing Second Edition, but no, Eye for an Eye, I think, is actually a really good one because everybody I play with locally are all very new to role-playing games, and they've all basically latched onto that one pretty good because it offers, you get a little bit of everything. You get some investigation, you get some social interaction, and you also get quite a bit of combat. So it kind of covers all the broad bases of role-playing. So I would say that that's a really good one for starting out players, and starting out GMs. It's not very, there's not too much information to get down with that one.
You know, I as much as I love that adventure, and it is a good introductory adventure, I find that one might be a little complex or long for a new group to throw them into a three game session adventure, right off the bat. But on the other hand, I don't think A Day Late and a Shilling Short really is sufficient enough. I think that one's a little too light on the content.
Mm-hmm.
But my new favorite introductory adventure after playing it is The Journey to Blackfyre Pass,
That is a really good one.
Which is easier to, it's lighter to get into. There's not as much heavy background and bookkeeping from the GM's perspective, especially if you're new at GMing. Eye for an Eye can be a little daunting. The Journey to Blackfyre Pass really allows for some cool investigation, some combat, some exploring, and you get to see several different cultures at the same time. You get to see the dwarves, you get to see the humans, you get to see some ghosts, some treasure.
There's a wood elf in that.
You do get to see the elf, yeah. And there's some cool social interactions that happen. And that adventure is it's a free one as well, so people are able to pull that one up right off the top.
I forgot to mention promote Liber Fanatica 8. It has one that scenario that I co-write. It's for starting groups. Mm-hmm. Check it out. It's free.
In Liber Fanatica 8. Yeah, covered that in one of our previous episodes very briefly.
Yeah,
we didn't get into the details of the adventure, but so you're suggesting that would also be a good introductory one.
I think it would be because it has a little investigation, little fighting, and some social interactions, and it actually discusses about starting the game with that.
It is taken from a perspective like that. This is the first adventure that the group plays, kind of. So it would be really good to start.
And that's meant to be the first of a series of adventures as mm-hmm. well, right?
Yes.
Okay. So our next question comes from Steven Zick. And his question's a little bit long, but I think it's worth reading because it really delves into what could potentially be an awkward mechanic within the game. One of our new party members is an elven swordmaster, and he has 4 or 5 Way of the Sword actions. We also have a troll slayer in the group. Looking at pure numbers and not the role-playing joy of having a variety of characters, the troll slayer didn't select his actions very well. I'll skip ahead a little bit here, but basically the troll slayer can do 15 or maybe 17 points of damage if he handles himself well. But the sword master, he can he can invoke Final Stroke of the Master after using 3 or 4 of his other actions, and he can end up doing 21 to 30 damage with a single strike. And it only adds 1 purple die to his attack. So he's really wondering, if you take that swordmaster and compare that swordmaster to other characters, like maybe a thief using a crossbow who kind of maxes out at about 16 points of damage, and in doing that he also adds 2 purple and 2 black to his action, or maybe comparing it to a slayer or some of the other combat careers, what do we think about the Way of the Sword and really how – is it broken? Is it the way it's supposed to be? What are your guys' thoughts on that?
I don't know. I think Swordmaster should be deadly. I mean, the game's pretty deadly as it is. I haven't had enough experience to see it break the game at all. People talk about the Ironbreaker being game-breaking too, but I have yet to really experience that. I have one of each who kind of play intermittently with me. I don't know. They fit the theme, I think, personally, but...
So I have I wanted to throw one little bit of color into the way swordmasters work, or the a little bit of the story behind them, and also the way that their attacks are kind of meant to function. But to give everybody a quick overview, the Way of the Sword, there's 5 actions dedicated to the Way of the Sword, and generally speaking, the Way of the Sword is kind of like a dance. And each maneuver is meant to be followed by another one, and each one is getting increasingly more and more powerful.
Nurgle!
Sorry.
Did your house just fall down?
It was garbage truck. Triple pie.
All right. So these maneuvers kind of basically become more and more effective the longer the swordmaster stays in combat. So and ultimately culminating in this final stroke of the master, which is really just meant to finish the enemy off. And that's really what Steven's getting at here, is at a certain point, that swordmaster in one turn can throw down 20 or 30 points of damage, which is enough to kill just about any creature and severely cripple even some of the biggest ones. So is this guy a heavy melee hitter? Absolutely. He's dealing out criticals like crazy because he's also got a two-handed weapon. But on the other hand, it's a little... it takes several turns of combat to build up to that point. I think it's kind of how that character's supposed to run. He's supposed to be a rockin' badass in combat. Mm-hmm. And if you're rolling your characters randomly, the statistical options of having a high elf in your party and all that really are going to be pretty low. If you're allowing your characters to be troll slayers, iron breakers, and you know, sword masters, you're going to have a ridiculously heavy damage dealing group to the point of the game breaking.
Yeah, because people picked that in my group, I actually went in and made a house rule where those are now advanced careers. You actually have to go through a soldier career within like some sort of combat career before you can actually move on to being one of those, because they're kind of higher up. Plus, I made a little bit of a caveat or whatever, where you actually also have to take education to be, well, I guess you automatically are educated as an elf, but you have to actually train in education to be a sword master. You don't just, like, you have access to it as an elf, but you actually have to spend a point to train in it in order to be the sword master, because it's part of their flavor, I guess. Plus that card, that action is called the final stroke of the master, so it makes sense to me, but who knows?
So I'm going to butcher this name on our next question, but Yizbrid asks, can Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay be played one-on-one?
I think it could. Why not? I've run several sessions. Yes, okay. What?
I've definitely run some of the one-on-one adventures, or I guess some one-on-one adventures myself. How have you found the rule set to work for that, Lowry?
I think it works great. It requires some consideration of how to run the sessions, but basically I've run from 1 to 5 players with 3rd edition and never had any problems with it.
Yeah, I've had really, really good experiences introducing people to the game one-on-one, and it's actually my intention to, with my new group that I'm putting together here in mid-September, my intention is to actually run the game with each individual a one-on-one session, like an hour session each, so that not only can they kind of have a story for their character to take into the group setting, but they also will understand the rules, because we can just play one-on-one and they can actually understand how the mechanics of the game work, so that we're not mired down in when we get into a group with people constantly asking questions as to, you know, how does this mechanic work? What am I supposed to do here? Because that can really slow the game down if people don't know how to use the mechanics of the game.
I found that if you're going to do a one-on-one session, one of the best things you can do is have the GM introduce an NPC to kind of accompany the character, mm-hmm. and really be able to help assist them in furthering the story, or kind of fulfill that role of what would otherwise be another player. And that also gives you a chance to kind of build some background and help them out in combat, because you kind of have to adjust the rules, or at least the encounters, if you're going to be playing just one person.
Yeah, you're going to be running a lot more. That's what I did when I played with my girlfriend, is I made 2 NPCs to accompany her on the road, so it worked really good.
It also can be used to give players spotlight time in games where there are more players. I ran with 5 players, and one of them was quite quiet almost all of the time, and I just decided that one time was needed to him have a small adventure of his own. So it really broke his shell, and I think he has been participating much more after that.
So our last question comes also from Steven Zick. He mentions, with the Path of Autumn Wind, if you get a comet, it says that you add 2 recharge tokens to any of your Way of the Sword cards currently recharging. So he's asking, if he's reading this correctly, does that mean he can add 2 to all of his cards if he wants to? And I think, yeah, that's kind of the idea.
Yeah, I'm not very familiar with that. I mean, my...
Basically, as the Swordmaster continues to fight, all of the rest of his actions prior to that kind of get woven into the dance, and they become more and more powerful as he continues to fight. So I think that is the intent, that yeah, you can voluntarily add recharge tokens to whatever one of your Way of the Sword actions that are recharging you want. You know, some benefit from it, some don't, but it's going to be your call. But that'll pretty much wrap up this episode of the Reckless Dice Podcast. We'll be back in 2 weeks with our next episode. Be sure to comment on the site, recklessdice.com, or shoot us an email at recklessdice@gmail.com, and follow us on Twitter or Facebook at Reckless Dice. Till next time, thanks for listening.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Bye-bye.